Morning, Mr. Matunzi.
Morning, Chairperson. It's exactly 9 o'clock. You can proceed with the meeting.
Good morning, Mr. Matunzi. Good morning, honorable members. Morning, the Director General. I don't know.
Recording in progress.
The Minister and the DM and the team of Home Affairs. Morning, State Law Advisor. And the team Parliamentary Legal Services and all the staff who are joining us. Mr. Matunzi, I'll request you to fly to the agenda so that we're all in one in terms of the process of going to engage on.
Chairperson, are you able to see it?
Yeah. Yes. Thanks very much. colleagues, this is our agenda for today to framework the deliberations today. I must start that we have received comments as we have been discussing the post-public hearings submissions by the stakeholders, call them stakeholders, the IEC, the Department of Home Affairs, the Parliamentary Legal Service, on the issues that are arising, which impact on the legislation. And that must inform the discussions. And I think in all the submissions that have zoomed in on what the committee ought to deliberate on these issues and on the itemized areas, the members will know that there are various outside the Parliamentary Legal Service views or submissions in the Department of Home Affairs and the IEC responses. There are views from all angles that have made submissions around on some of the issues that are related. What is good is that the IEC and the Parliamentary Legal Service, they did not zoom into the policy options that Home Affairs has submitted in their or outlined at the in their electoral amendment bill. So this session meeting today will take broad discussions on the issues. As we continue the discussion, will not formulate attempt to formulate a decision on the matters, but we must take note that we have scheduled a time for this process to adequately be concluded. Thirdly, is that we are going to, or we have already applied, we know that the Parliament is rising on the 15th, if I'm correct, Mr. Matunzi. We have applied that the committee must continue to work on this matter. So that we're able to finalize the process. You are aware that we have a constitutional court has determined a deadline, and the committee has taken into consideration the time and the stages in how Parliament must run its process since this electoral amendment bill was tabled on the 10th of January this year. We're taking account to that there's a process that is undertaken by Parliamentary Service and or the Parliament, let me say Parliament, approached the Constitutional Court for an extension And that process is still within our the powers of the Constitutional Court to respond to the to the request. I must also, we must say that it is within the context that we must be able to have enough time to deal with this electoral amendment bill. The NCOP must also interface with this electoral amendment bill, and also time for the president to account. And this will also be subjected to debate or submission of the report for consideration of the both houses. So that is a understanding of our process in terms of this deliberation. We have a team here of state law advisors, Ms. Williams and Ms. Govender, and the DHA legal team, Mr. Malakate, and the parliamentary legal services. So members, if they will ought to sort clarity in terms of the issues that we've been deliberating on from now, as we move along with this process, they will able to interface with the with these issues. If there are issues that are going to be raised, which are outside the framework of the Department of Home Affairs and the legal team who are assisting this process, and are related to the IEC in terms of the either regulations or the act that might be changed, or the areas that are lying in the IEC. What we'll do, we'll note those issues, because the IEC also, they are joining here, they all, always join us and welcome commissioners. We'll then take that issues, those issues, and we'll request the IEC to come and respond on the issues. But if members will also feel that as we go into discussions, so that we're not able to cloud clarities on the issues, we need to have fine time for the IEC in particular to come and respond on technical issues that are related and that will will impact on the legislation that the committee will be dealing with. Lastly, I think we all right, understood the Constitutional Court judgment in terms of the anomaly of the Electoral Act 73 of 1998 and how Parliament need to correct that. And it's good that this, we have now agreed, adopted that we must proceed and change this Electoral Amendment Act 73 of 1998, as last week we've adopted the MOD that reflect that we can proceed with the, this process. Now, this is a framework which we are trying to recap in the process for comfort. Where there's still a need for thorough consultation on subject matter or the issues, members, I think there are also allowed to take a pause so that we're able to engage on this matter objectively within the context of what the submission has been made and the responses of comments on the subject the matter. We'll request Mr. Matonsi to run apologies, and then we'll request Mr. Salmon, we've requested him just to rough on the issues that they've picked up for purpose of discussions and deliberations. And then we'll have members to deal with the framework and so that we're able to move forward. The legal team, if there are issues that I think you might have picked up where members may not have asked you, you have to assist the chair so that we're able to highlight it for point of discussion or clarity. You may find that some of the issues that arises and you require guidance, and you may need to get in touch with the chair so that we're able to be at work. It's going to be involved matter as already started, and consultation in terms of the how we're going to navigate on this on this matter. Thank you, Mr. Matunzi.
Morning, Chairperson, and everyone. From my side, Chairperson, in the committee side, there's no apologies. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. No apologies. Any member? Yeah, apologies. Yes. Co-chair, Honorable Lizette.
Good morning, Chairperson. I have also got a portfolio committee of social development, so I will leave at about 10:15 and then come back into the meeting. So I will leave at 10:15 and come back. Apologies.
Noted. Noted, co-chair. Noted. Yeah, Mr. Salman,
Chair.
Can you come in? Okay.
Chair.
Honorable Fasa.
I am in the meeting but will not be able. I'm not well.
Noted. Any other apology? Okay, thank you. Mr. Salmon, can you come in?
Good morning, Chairperson. Can I just confirm whether you can see the document?
Yeah, I think we can see the document. Thank you.
Great. So I've just highlighted the issues raised by the IEC, the EHA, and our legal services, combined with the essence of what arose in the public hearings. And these are essentially the decisions that the committee needs to make related to the clauses that were commented on. So I'm not going to go through the entire bill, but rather just highlight for members' memory the key decisions that need to be made on each of the clauses just to help the discussions. So dealing with clause one, which is with definitions, the question was whether the definition of the word region is sufficiently clear as compared to a province, whether we need further clarity. Secondly, is there a need to redefine a party liaison committee as, for example, a liaison committee or electoral liaison committee, along with the inclusion of such amendments in sections 20, 62, and 64 of the Electoral Act, where there's reference made to party liaison committees, which might not necessarily include or which excludes the independent candidates as it's currently stated. So either that or provision to indicate that party liaison committees also include independent candidates. Then going on to clause four is, should amendments to 31AA and 31B3F be removed to bring independence in line with political party candidates in terms of not being required to be ordinarily resident in the region in which they are registered to stand in the election. Four there, should there be signature requirements in 31B3A for independence as compared to the no signature requirements for party candidates? Five, should the deposit for independence in 31B3B be the same as parties, given that they only qualify for one seat? Six, should the requirement for the determination of the number of signatures required or the deposit needed for independence be left to the IEC to formulate in the regulations, or should the formula for the determination of signature requirements or deposits be included in the bill itself? Seven, should the requirement in 31B3F of not having been a member of a political party for 3 months prior to running as an independent remain, be increased, or be reduced? clause 8, then, depending on the decision on point 5 above, which relates to deposits, should the section on refunds be changed to make it in line with the decision on deposits? Then clause 11, which is the main clause in the bill, is should the clause 11.1 ratio of regional and compensatory seats to parties remain 50-50, as in 200 seats regional and 200 seats compensatory, or change to 75% and 25%, or allow for all candidates to contest all 400 seats? These are the three main options proposed. 10, in clause 11, sub clause 4 to 9, should there be reference to constituencies, either 66 or 200, as stated in the Conseil Slabbert and Private Members Bill? 11, in clause 11.5, sub clause 5 to 8, on regional seats, should the three rounds remain the same as they currently are, or a single round according to the Droop formula as proposed by the IEC to improve proportionality and inclusion of small parties? Alternatively, there was a two-stage process that was proposed where all who meet the full quota for one seat be awarded a seat, whether it's party or independence, and once no one is left who's entitled to a seat based on meeting the full quota threshold, the remaining seats should be then given to the candidates that have the highest average of votes per seat won, that being proposed by one of the parties. Then 12, should clause 11.16 be removed in favour of ensuring compliance to the elections rather than forfeiting seats if parties don't have enough candidates on their list after an election? 13, clauses 11 to 16 and 25, should the IEC draft a proposal for the inclusion in the bill of the three ballot system for the National Assembly compensatory, National Assembly regional and provincial legislative, either with the requirement of being ordinarily resident in the region for all candidates or the removal of this requirement? Then 14, in clause 11.34, how should it be responded in court to the objection that the major disadvantages of independents having their surplus votes discarded effectively means they have no choice but to run as parties, which then means that the bill does not truly fairly address constitutional ruling for the inclusion of independents, particularly in the National Assembly, but also the NCOP, because they can't have more than one seat. And then clause 11.34, should there be by-elections for replacing independents? And what would this cost according to the calculations of the projected number of by-elections? So is it really going to be really expensive and time-consuming? And alternatively, should votes be transferable, as in the Laporta bill, where independents have a list of running mates where their excess votes go to? Or should all or just independent candidates with the next highest number of votes in the initial elections fill the seat? So this is the proposal by the IEC and the DHA in the forms. And then if going with the proposal of replacing vacant independent candidate seats with a candidate that received the next highest number of votes, will it be argued that this gives political parties the benefit of replacing their seats with chosen candidates next on their list, whereas independent candidates and their support base could now be replaced by a political party or an independent with a completely different ideology? Just an issue for consideration there. And then this a clause that's not in the bill, but there will need to be a proposed amendment to Chapter 5, related to Section 68-69 of the Electoral Act, to allow for independents to have agents during elections, or some formulation of how they will be included as voting process. So those are the main issues. I've seen we need to decide on. But I'll take advice from legal services. I've definitely put that out. And I'll be back to you, James.
Thank you, Jason.
you very much, Mr. Salmon. On the note that we've picked up for purpose of dealing with this issue. Members, we may not exhaust all the issues today. And I'll tell you why. We'll then outline AD when we end up. You will just give us a brief outline on the program, on how we've refined it and how we're going to run on this matter, so that you are able to contribute to the issues, and you can run in all of them, or pick up of the issues that you're able to interface with. What will then assist is that the team which we've requested, which is led by Salmon, is to isolate the issues that are arising from the your contributions, and we'll test that with the legal team. As we deliberate, we'll then take decisions on some of the issues that are clearer, that are informed by the requires us to deal with it in the legislation, and isolate such some of the issues as you raise them that impact on the work of the IEC, and the IEC then able to contribute to the issues, and then deliberate on that on that space. We resolve on the specific issues. I will invite members to comment on the issues that are raised here, and the broader issues that I've been picked up around the submissions, and also the responses that they have laid by the IEC. I will start with the co-chair, because it's indicated that she will have to leave to attend also a portfolio committee, and then I would come to Honorable Molekwa, I will come to Honorable Tito, Honorable Tswako, Honorable Ross, Honorable Ramolobeng, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Pillay. You will assist me, Mr. Matonzi, if the other members of who are not in the committee who have joined this meeting. Thank you, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I guess I'm going to touch on the first four issues. I think it is my view, Chairperson, that we should rather use the terminology province instead of region. And I would like to make the point, for example, that in the Western Cape, we refer to an area called, for example, the Boland region. And the Boland region only, it's a collection of towns. It's not a province. And so I thought that the terminology province is clear. It's clearly understandable for the public and our constituencies at large. So I don't think region is sufficiently clear. On point two, I do think that there is a need for us to redefine party liaison committee to a liaison committee or an electoral liaison committee, considering that, of course, it's now will encompass individual candidates as well, and it will no longer only be for parties to liaise with the IEC. On the issue of signatures, I think that to require, for example, independent candidates to get signatures will be an unfair way of treating them in terms of the fact that we do not ask political party candidates to get signatures. So for the interest of fairness, I do not think that we should consider that. And also, I think we should go back to the legal advice we got on the issue of that a candidate should be a resident in the region or province they are contesting. And the submissions that we got argued that the residency requirement places an independent candidate in an unfulfilled position, as there is no such requirement for political party candidates. And so I think that should also be scrapped. But I think those are my views on the first four points. I don't know if you want to take all of them at this stage, but I think those are my submissions for now, Chairperson.
If you have contribution, members, there's somebody not moved. Yes.
Sounds like Parliament TV is switched on. It's like they're unmuted.
Members or colleagues, or can we assist Mr. Matonzi? Or yeah, thank you for that intervention. I was saying that, co-chair, you can, if there are issues that you want to take it up on there, you can continue.
I'm going to deal with the first four now, Chairperson, and then I'll come back if that's fine.
No,
that's fine. That's fine. Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, my comment is just on the last one, the first one, that referring to the region sufficiently clear as compared to the provinces. Chairperson, as you know, that in the provinces we do have regions. So I think if the bill referred to the provinces as region, this will cause more confusion. So I think if possible, we just have to review or the provinces remain the provinces instead of the region, so that if the independent candidate states for the province, it should state like that. Because of previously we have, in the system that we're using as a country, we have province to national, province to province, and national to national. So I think that term should just remain in order for other people to be able to understand the bill. My second issue is on the cooling period. I think the 3 months cooling period is sufficient, Chairperson. We should not extend it because it will mean that maybe the bee will suppress other people if we can extend that 3 months cooling period. So for me, I think the 3 months cooling period is sufficient enough for people to stay from other party to stand for independent or to another party. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yes.
Sorry, I had one more note which I didn't read from my notes. On the issue of deposit for independent candidates, it is my view that it would be unfair to suggest that an independent candidate would have to raise the same type of money for a deposit as a political party. I know there are opposing views which says independent candidates and political parties should be treated as the same. But I think it might actually have an opposite effect that if you ask independent candidates to raise the same type of money as political parties, it might actually exclude them from running for elections. And so I think, in other words, we would have to also look as a committee at what should be done in this regard, because I think it might have the opposite effect where you might discourage independent candidates would not be able to raise the same type of deposit. So I just wanted to add that. And of course, the cooling period of 3 months, I agree with the previous honourable colleague that it suffices. Thank you, Chair.
There was a view, I think, in one of the public hearings, and I think both the IEC and also the legal team will probably come in later and contribute that in the manner, in the subject cooling period, that when we conduct the local government elections, the cooling period which is proposed in this amendment bill is not because if we're to treat independent like or any persons who want to contest as independent in the provincial and national elections. Now, the same treatment in terms of the processes must apply. And I'm raising this matter in terms of the cooling period that is being raised now of the 3 months, and in a local government election, there's another period. So I think this is a matter which we also need to reflect on. Honorable Dito? Honorable Khanyile. Unmute. Okay. Honorable Khanyile. Honorable Ramalobe. Honorable Ruas.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take it.
Yes, proceed, Honorable Ruas. I'll just check with members. Maybe they have network problems.
Sure, thank sure. Thank you, Chair. So I'll just go through point by point, and thank you, Adam, for this summary. It was very, very helpful. In the definition of the region, I think, Chair, we did discuss this in one meeting, and we were assured that this was a terminology that's been widely used by the in the electoral circles over the years without much problem. In section one, the definition says that this means the territorial area of a province. But perhaps one could check if region is used in other electoral acts, and whether you know that there could be an issue then with trying to now change it to province in this act if regions are referred to in other related acts. Then on point number two, I think if we talk about the liaison committees, certainly yes, I think there is a need to redefine the names just to reflect that it's not only parties. Item number three, when you talk about the requirement to be ordinarily resident in the region, and I think it's a debate that we've had a few times. It is this thing of when is an independent candidate disadvantaged as opposed to a candidate that is part of a political party? So Chair, the IEC has suggested that independents should be allowed to stand in other provinces. And my understanding was that this was going to be part of what they came with certain amendments. So I think it would be good to see what the wording is there in this regard, because the feeling there was that they should be able to stand where they qualify to vote, not necessarily where they reside. But again, you know, with political parties, I know that we are required to only stand in one province where we vote. I think the other area that still needs to be clarified is that the IEC also proposed that independents should be able to stand in each province, provided they get the number of signatures and they pay the deposits, etc. But that those votes that they get across those provinces should be aggregated; they should fall away. And I think that you know that this is certainly a bit of a concern that it could definitely be considered by a court to be unfair. If you have a scenario where somebody stood in nine provinces, they got just short of the number of votes to get a full seat, and then they were overlooked because all of their votes except for the vote in one province would have counted. Then point number four, should there be signature requirements? Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you. Can you go back to the points you're raising, the last point?
Okay, so what the IEC said is that you know they believe that independents should be able to stand in each province because they qualify for the National Assembly. You know, they should qualify for the National Assembly, therefore they should be able to stand in all the provinces, provided that they pay the deposit and get the signature requirement in each of those provinces. But the IEC also proposed that all those votes that they get across the provinces should not be aggregated at the end. So in other words, let's say they get in a single province, all the other votes should fall away. And I think we, you know, one is going to face a problem with that if you talk about the fairness of that from a court challenge point of view. So this is something that hasn't been clarified yet that we need to clarify. Is that fine, Chair?
No, proceed. No, I'm
okay.
My notes, yeah. Thanks for
sure. Then point number four, when it talks about signature requirements, Chairperson, again, I think it's been mentioned, you know, we should be careful. The court judgment spoke about independents being able to participate without being sort of negatively prejudiced. But certainly a signature requirement, you know, it's not something that you haven't seen around the world. And the thing about an independent candidate standing, you know, there's a lot of talk about being represented at a local level and being accountable to persons. And there's been a big outcry that came out in the public participation as well. And that is one of the requirements of, you know, signature requirements means that you have to get a certain number of people that say, I will support you, I know you, and I want you to stand as a public representative. So I don't think it's unfair, Chairperson. And perhaps, if anything, you know, political parties could also be required to meet the signature requirement. But it certainly serves a purpose, Chairperson. And, you know, another thing that came out in the public participation was a concern about very long ballot papers, etc. So, Chairperson, you know, to say that you don't have to meet the signature requirement, you don't have to pay a deposit, then what is the qualifying criteria that stops anybody from putting their name on there? You know, on this list. So I don't think it's an unfair requirement, Chairperson. But, you know, there could be a consideration that it be extended to parties as well. I don't think that would be a problem. Then in terms of number five, should the deposit be the same? Chairperson, I think one of the things about this deposit is it helps to carry the costs of having that person on the ballot. So having the DA on the ballot and having Adrian Ruiz on the ballot, it takes the same amount of space, it takes the same amount of system space, etc., to do that. And so that's one of the reasons, apart from, you know, it is really also to assist with the costs of having that person stand for elections. Chairperson, I think it's just important to add, you know, we saw the Political Party Funding Act and the effect that had on political parties. I mean, many parties had to lay off staff, for example, when that funding was cut. And the fact is that, you know, it's not just that parties are rich and that they have money that falls from the sky. Parties go and they raise money. They have fundraisers. It's hard work. It's over and above what you do. You do it in the evenings. So also, again, Chairperson, it's not an unreasonable requirement that somebody that wants to stand in Parliament, that wants to represent South Africans at a national level, should have the capability to raise funds and have enough of a ground support that will support them. So, Chairperson, that's a few comments on that. And then the other side of this question, Chairperson, is, you know, if you don't pay the deposit, then should you get a portion of the equitable share? You haven't paid the deposit, now you get elected. Do you now receive the equitable share as a member of Parliament? Then on point number six, Chairperson, I think, you know, this talks about should the formula for determination of signature requirements be included in the bill or should it be regulated? Chairperson, you know, the DA's position here is that as it stands now, the formula is in the schedule to the Act. So it's not a regulation, even though it's in a schedule to the Act. And so the way it is now, Chairperson, is probably fine. I don't see the Constitutional Court judgment, why that would require us to change this, Chairperson. Then question seven, this talks about the requirement of not having been a member of a political party for 3 months prior to running. I think the question here is also, you know, we generally agreed on the 3 months, but I think the other question is the issue of the signature requirement. So this would require thousands of signatures. And what came out again in the public hearings is that those signatures would need to be verified by the IEC. And so I think we need to get an indication of, you know, how long reasonably would that signature verification process take place? Because you could get it that an independent candidate then wants to stand and they come 3 months before and then they come with a list of several thousand signatures that have been written down on a piece of paper. How long is it going to take the IEC to process that? I think we just need to get an indication from the IEC on that. Then in terms of eight, you know, when we look at the deposits, I think I've covered that to a large extent. And then clause 11, Chairperson, I think, you know, we made good progress on that with the recommendations of the IEC. Again, it would be good to know more or less the time frame that, that we can expect to get that sort of wording that we were looking for. I think in general, there was an agreement that the proposed seat allocation system was a step in the right direction. And really the challenge there was allowing independents to be considered for PR seats. And that seems to resolve that issue. I think that is the one issue that is really outstanding there. And so when we see that wording and how it looks, then we can take that discussion further. In terms of item 10, should there be reference to constituencies? Chairperson, you know that...
Can you move with the presentation, Mr. Salmon, as he referred to the number?
Yes. Hello, the Chairperson.
Proceed.
Okay. Okay, so item number 10. So it talks about should there be reference to constituencies, as in the Van Sales Slavic report, etc., etc. So, Chairperson, you know, our view is that, you know, we don't have to look at constituencies in this bill, although the DA's position is certainly that we need to have more constituencies. You know, I think the pragmatic view in terms of the timeframes available is that for 2024, to allow independents to participate, we probably need to look at regions for now. But certainly, you know, this would need to be addressed in a future amendment after 2024, where we then look at constituencies. But I think that, you know, there's no requirement from that judgment that I know of where we need to have constituencies. Then on item 11, it talks about the regional seats and that. Again, Chair, I think with a lot of these items, once we get the wording from the IEC, then we can look at these items again. Just in terms of number 15, here we talk about should there be by-elections, and I think generally the agreement that not allowing an independent to, once they are incapacitated or pass away, that vacancy to be replaced, the advice we received was that would be unconstitutional. And I think the question was, this is a very long thing. This is the question of running mates. And I think, you know, Chair, we have deliberated on this as a committee, and really, I think there is a general consensus that the gist of the judgment was about allowing persons to stand as independents, the right not to associate over here. And what you have at the moment is... So we're talking about running mates here, Chair. But I think, you know, we have deliberated on that, Chairperson, in terms of do you have a running mate, etc. And I think, you know, risk over here, if you say candidate number one says, I want candidate number two to get my votes, and candidate number two says candidate number three, four, five, you can end up with such a long daisy chain that... your vote can go to somebody that you're not even aware of. And really, with a party list, it kind of covers it. If you have votes for a party, the first candidate is there, the overflow votes go to the second person on the list, and so on and so forth. And so the advice that I see that we've received is that, you know, independents, if they want to pass on votes to the next person, etc., they have the possibility to form a voluntary association and stand in that way, Chairperson. So I don't, to our mind, there doesn't seem to be an impediment to setting up such a system. You either stand as a party, a voluntary association that has been considered a party, or as a completely independent individual, Chairperson. So I think we just need to be aware of, you know, these unintended consequences that you could have a chain of persons that are given a vote. And when a voter stands there, they won't necessarily see that whole chain. And it might also be, Chair, your first choice might be an independent candidate. Your second choice might be a party. And so we cannot assume on behalf of the voter that they are voting for an independent because they don't like a political party. It might be their pastor that's standing, it might be a community organization, and they will support that independent. But if that independent wasn't there, they might support a party. So if we go and say that, you know, the next person on the list, if an independent resigns, should be an independent, for example, we are then deciding on behalf of the voter what their next choice would have been, chairperson. And so, you know, the idea of saying that if an independent resigns, and that's certainly, it should be filled from the you know, the next person that's the next highest votes or the next party. If we don't allow the next party with the next highest votes to take that vacancy, they would also argue that it's unfair because they are the next person on the list. They are the representative with the next highest number of votes. So I think that's it from me, Chair, but certainly it would be useful to understand when we are going to receive the amendments on the replacement of independent candidates as well as the seat allocation system, and then we can deliberate on that at that stage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for your contributions, Honourable Rose. Can I check Honourable Tito, if you're back? Honourable Ramlobeng? Honourable Kanyile?
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues, and everyone that is in the meeting, and thank you for the opportunity. Chairperson, I have been greatly covered by Honourable Ross. I think the only thing that I would want to mention is the issue of party agents. I think it would be very important that we consider that independent candidates should have party agents that are going to man the VDs on their behalf, but maybe the IEC will then guide us on the number and those type of things. I think we have discussed this previously as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kanyile, Honourable Pile.
Very good morning, Chairperson and colleagues, and thank you for the opportunity. Chair, there's quite a few matters that one would want to address, but I think it's important to firstly look at things holistically and be able to understand, because we started a process on this discussion. And we've received submissions, firstly, from citizens of this country. And then we've had a look at the different stakeholders, like you've referred to them, and the submissions that they've made, particularly if one needs to look at legal. I think it's important to take into consideration some of the points that were raised by legal, so that we avoid any future court matters. I think the first understanding that we need to agree on, both as a committee and as stakeholders, is that when one is contesting the election, particularly now that we are including independent candidates, that you are contesting the space as an individual. And like Honourable Ruas has said, you then have the choice of whether you want to form anything else. And I think that then a lot of what we are discussing now then falls away, because you then become a political party, so to say. But if we had to zoom into one contesting the space as an independent candidate, then there are several things that one needs to look at. And I think the first one is that, and it came up in submissions, so I have a differing view to Honourable Lizal about the deposits in terms of requirements. I think we have to understand that there are political parties currently that only make one seat, whether it's at a provincial legislature or at the National Assembly, but yet they pay the same deposits. Now, if an independent candidate is going to achieve a seat or going to garner enough votes to be able to get a seat, it means that you're actually contesting the same space, and it comes down to apples for apples. I think it's simple to understand that if you get a seat in comparison to a political party getting one seat, why then should they pay a deposit and you don't? And I think it's one that we need to consider very seriously, that there has to be a deposit of some sorts, and that it all depends on how one scores or how one does in terms of the election outcome. But in doing so, I think it's important to also then the clause about the refunding of deposit. I think it's important because that obviously takes into account that if an independent actually then gets enough votes for a seat, that you then get a refund in terms of the deposit. So I think it's important that there must be an inclusion of deposits. Chair, I must also agree that there has to be criteria. There has to be, I wouldn't say requirements, but there has to be certain criteria that one has to follow. And for me, it can't be left to the IEC. I think it has to be part of the bill. It has to be part of legislation so that at a later stage, it can't be challenged. Because once this becomes a law and is passed, then it's clear that before you attempt to contest the elections, you'll be able to understand and know that this is exactly what is there and that you are contesting based on what is in the legislation. And so it's important that we place all of these emphasis and clearly define it within the legislation. I think in as far as having to minimize what decisions are being made should actually be left to being in the bill. And there are certain things that obviously will fall outside of us when it comes to IEC. For example, the Electoral Commission Act is something that we can't and will not, obviously attempt to look at, because, you know, they would obviously have to bring that before Parliament. There's a need for certain things to be looked at. But I think we must emphasize that a lot of this must come within the Act itself. Further to that, Chair, I think that the request or the requirement in terms of, criteria in terms of signatures is important because you can't just have someone who wakes up tomorrow and decides, I want to contest elections, but have not shown any support. And I think it's important that we must be able to look at that. But insofar as determining what that should be, I think that there has to be a discussion about that. And I think that there has to be further discussion and deliberation so that we reach consensus and an agreement on what the number of signatures are. And that number of signatures should then be placed within the bill so that, again, it's not something that is going to be contested legally at a later stage. I must say that, you know, it's quite disappointing that when we started the process of public hearings, we were already told at the very start by certain stakeholders that, you know, there is going to be a challenge and that they're going to challenge even the process. Now, if we don't want to have a long drawn out process and everything that we decide to put in there is challenged, then I'm saying that we need to be able to look at it carefully. And again, Chair, while I understand that we have deadlines, I understand that the court has given us until June. We've obviously requested an extension. But again, this is a very important piece of legislation that I'm going to propose that we should not rush the process. Because if we try to rush this because of deadlines, you're going to be sitting with problems later on. You're going to be sitting with challenges later on. And I think it's important that we are able to deal and deliberate with these things properly and also do it correctly, because it's in the best interest of our country. And I think that when you are doing something as important as this, which changes the entire political landscape, the political arena, changes the House of Parliament to an extent where you are now bringing in individuals, I think it's important that we get it right the first time and that we must not then rush the process to be able to finalize it because we have a court order hanging over us. And I think it's important that we're able to make those points. Chair, I also have to agree that you know, most of the points that Adam brings out in his presentation needs further deliberation. You know, it can't just take one meeting this morning to be able to decide on these things. I think for me, if I look at all of these clauses, while you might agree on one clause, there's going to be two or three other clauses or pieces of legislation or acts that would need to be looked at and perhaps even changed to some extent. And I think we have to start unpacking what is the ripple effect or what is the repercussion of certain things that we may put in this act. Because if you, for example, say that, and I agree that there has to be a party liaison committee, I agree that there has to be the inclusion of party agents, but again, it means that certain pieces of legislation and acts have to change and have to be amended so that you are able to accommodate for that change to take place. And so I agree that perhaps we need to have further engagement and deliberate on this. But again, I think we should take point by point, deliberate on it, agree on it, and then move on to the next one. In that way, we'll be able to finalize this process in a much more smoother and easier way. Just looking at it at a glance, Chair, I have to say that we should, as a committee, stick to the current approach of where we include independent candidates, but not at this constituency-based system, because that then takes us to a different discussion altogether. And I'm not saying that I'm supporting one over the other. I'm just saying that that process is going to unpack so many other things that needs to happen. It's going to include demarcation board. It's going to include changes in demarcations. And I think that in itself is going to be a process that might take another 2 years. So I think we must be able to be clear about what we're doing now and how we're doing it. And I think there was a question around whether there should be the 400 or 200. Chair, I'm in support of the compensatory approach that yes, it should be 200 and not 400. But I'm interested on one point that Honorable Roos raised, and I think perhaps it needs some further discussion and deliberation, is the one about whether you are contesting regional or provincial, like you may call it, and then you aggregate the votes to be able to say that you now bring all those votes. And I think it's a very important point that we may have missed in our discussions, because if you are saying that, it means that an independent contests all 9 provinces. And does that mean that collectively you're going to take all the votes from the 9 provinces and then say, for example, that you qualify in terms of the threshold, in terms of the quota or formula to then get a seat at the National Assembly? And I think it's important that we have to be able to discuss that, because my understanding is that you would contest a regional seat or a national seat, and that obviously the votes will differ. And again, I think it also speaks to the ballot, because if you are casting a vote for a provincial legislature, then you can only be counted or only be, that seat can only be reflective of the provincial legislature. So you look at whether you've reached the threshold of the quota in that on that ballot. But if you are appearing on the national ballot, then obviously you're going to be taking a collective votes across the country. Now, that's another important thing, because I don't think there's been any discussion in terms of whether that is going to be allowed. And if it is, what then is the framework that we're going to look at, and how are we going to ensure that, you know, it is a fair process and that you are then allowed to. And I think we must look at that point. Yeah, there's actually quite a bit. It's just that I think there's going to be a need for much more deliberations and discussions. But Chair, I just want to say that anything that we say and do must be guided by legal. Again, I'm saying so that it doesn't, you know, we reach a point where we agree on something, and then legal comes back and gives us an opinion that says, actually, I don't think you should be doing this, or you shouldn't have. And it's just going to be wasting time. So I think, you know, whatever the points are, perhaps we must request legal to look at it and then give us, you know, their input on that. And again, I'm saying that we must allow for most of everything to actually be in the bill rather than having to leave it to the IEC to decide. And just as a parting thought or a parting point that I want members to consider going forward is that there's going to be many other pieces of legislation that would have to be looked at and changed and amended. And I think we need to start looking at that process and ask ourselves, are we going to, even if we look at the time that we've asked for extension, are we going to be able to be able to achieve that? But again, I think it's important for us to understand where we are and be able to finalize on this process before we can even start any other process. But I'm just saying it's something you need to start thinking about at the back of your heads is what are the other pieces of legislation that we have to be looking at as well. I think I'm going to stop there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, colleagues, for a contribution on the framework that has been raised by we're able to crack to start the discussion. There are two points which I think we must just be cautious when we deliberate so that it does not get out of context. One is that I get the sense that the time frame, and I think we may not need to re-emphasize that we don't need to rush this process, we need to take a longer time. And that that statement may be interpreted wrongly, because what informs the Constitutional Court requirement, no, sorry, application, is that we must give a period, which it has been outlined in our papers, so that we're able to complete this matter that we're seized with. And I think that is an articulation that members must know, taking account to the issues that may emerge as we deliberate and interface with both the Home Affairs, Parliamentary Legal Service, and the IEC. So I just want to just highlight that that matter, that the committee is within that framework of understanding on the period. We did that because we did not want to short circuit the application, because we did not want to short circuit the process. The second one is that and I think members are beginning to raise it, which we'll come back to it later, so that it inform is properly informed when we are able to take a policy a position on which option we must submit to the assembly. And I think there was a detailed submission on both the options which were articulated by the task team, but also the amendment, electoral amendment, that affirms or proposes that is the option that we must take. In the context that the constituency electoral system and the which members are beginning to argue in terms that it will need a long time to deal with the matter, we may need to strongly articulate with portfolio of evidence informed by the facts that are before yourself, whether that option will not be considered now that we're dealing with, because society has raised, or stakeholders raised, that there's another option that we may need to interface, consider as we deal with this electoral amendment, and others raised the in the manner members are raising the first option of the minimalist that is on the electoral amendment day. So what I've been proposing in terms of the highlight is that we may need to have a balanced submissions at that time we're going to discuss, informed by the issues that are emerging and considering what it has been raised in responses. What I think I will also raise is to, there are other issues which have been raised that requires a legal contribution. And also the IEC contributions will request a legal, because there's clarity seeking questions that have been placed that need to be raised here, responded or comment. And if there's need enough time to come and alert the committee on some of the issues, we still have that time within the framework of our agenda. I will request legal team to comment on some of the issues that were raised that require your attention. I will start with the state law advisors, come to Parliamentary Legal Service, and if Mr. Malikane also, I'll bring him in. Then we'll then get a sense if the IEC may need one to get to some of the issues now, or they can come back to us in the next meeting, which is on Tuesday. So I think we can able to do that. Or before that, Adams, is there any other matter you wanted to raise out of our presentation here?
Nothing from my side yet, Chairperson. I'm just taking notes of what the comments are from the members.
Yes. Can I start with the state law advisor, Ms. Williams, Ms. Govender, if there's any matter you've picked up that we need to at least comment so that we take note, which will assist us to discuss as we move forward. Then I'll call back, invite members to comment on some of the issues that we have raised. Ms. Williams?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, at this stage, we have nothing to add. There's nothing that you would see unconstitutional. We'd like to request that as we go along and issues do arise, the committee can request help in respect of certain particular issues, because lots of the issues relate to policy. And in respect of the legal issues, we can advise her that with regard to that. But there's one thing that we may want to mention with regard to the consequential amendments as a result of the appointing powers and duties of agents and candidates within voting stations. We'll take our guidance from the IC because they said that they will need to decide as to consider practical considerations as to what they take into account in respect of that. And as soon as we have that information, we can consider it and advise a committee and propose maybe drafting formulations. But we'll see what the drafting proposals has come from the IC and the relevant parties who made proposals, and we'll consider that, and then we'll advise a committee promptly. Thanks, Jay.
Well, thank you. I think that covers Ms. Govender. Mr. Malikane, I'm not sure if you are on the same framework. DG, is Mr. Malikane on the meeting?
Hello?
Hello?
Good morning. Members, he is not, but I've taken note of the issues that were raised. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Daksha?
Chair, good morning, everyone. At this point, as the State Law Advisor has also correctly pointed out, a lot of the issues raised are actually policy issues, and we will be available to to give our legal input on any drafts that are formulated either by the department or the IEC. But there's just one thing I would like the committee to take cognizance of, is that if there are any amendments that are going to be proposed to the bill, which are not already in the bill, but amend a different section of the Act, then in terms of the rule, we may have to seek permission from the House to do so. So we just need to factor all of that into our program. But at this point, we have taken note of the discussions and any legal issues that arise going forward, we would definitely give our legal views. I'm not sure if my colleague, Mr. Jikela, might want to add further. So I'll hand over to him.
Okay, thank you. That's Mr. Jikela.
Sure. Thank you very much for the opportunity, sir. I just need to remind you that in our response to the issues that were raised in the public submissions, we dealt with most of the issues that were raised again today. So I would just want to draw the attention of the committee on the input that we had made a couple of weeks back in our response. From my list, from what has been said here, there is an issue of deposit. In our response, we dealt with that issue. The issue of signatures, the issue of the cooling off period, residency, party liaison committee, and I think that's the issue we raised for the first time ourselves when we looked at the Act, the issue of the region and province, which again was raised today. These are all the issues that we have already dealt with in our response, but we will be happy, like Daksha was saying, to further develop in that as we see the versions that come up and the deliberations are progressing. And again, Chair, the issue of consequential amendments to other legislation, it's an issue we raise that we need to look broader than just the Electoral Act in doing this, because there is a knock-on effect on other pieces of it, like the party funding and all of those. So those are the issues we have dealt with in our document that we presented to the committee in response to the committee. But for now, Chairperson, I will leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we've highlighted in our remark that the issues which will reflect on the framework of the discussions, some have find expression in the response comments of the presentations which were done by the IEC and the Parliamentary Legal Service. And members are beginning to venture into what are possible decision making to consider as we deliberate on this matter in reference to the responses that were made, but informed by the inputs that are arising from all the submissions, including our stakeholders. And that what and what the and what the Constitutional Court requires us to do. I think we are Commissioner Love, if there's any matter, or Commissioner Mayepso, I don't know, but I've noticed that there's Commissioner Mayepso and Commissioner Love, if you're in the meeting.
Commissioner Love is not in the meeting, Chairperson. Good morning to you, and good morning to honourable members. And everyone online. Two issues, really. One is we would be very happy to receive the summary of the issues as catalogued by Mr. Salmon. If we get this list, let's say today, we will then give our input in writing. I think Tuesday might be too early. I'd like to propose that we aim for Friday next week, if it's possible, and we will then look at the draft on the issues we had proposed. I submit as such, Chairperson.
Oh, thank you very much. I think that assists us to run on the issues that have been highlighted by. Mr. Salmon. Members, is there any other matter that we need to you need to raise so that it assists the deliberation course? Because
we are going now to enter into a space where we, informed by the issues that we raised, take decisions in terms of the framework or on the issues that are arising from the Electoral Amendment Bill, per a point that has been raised by the notes that we're drafting. And Mr. Salmon will then rework on the draft work on the issues which the committee must confirm. Now that we have picked up and highlighted some of the issues which will require policy, which will require us to process, and members must be able to deal with. Mr. Mohebza, in our last meeting, it's important that we come back also with the to express more on the droop formula in terms of the allocation. I think I want us to, because that was a commitment, and that is a key issue in terms of the allocation of seats. You may need to come back to the committee to deal with that subject as we are responding to other issues, so that our members and those are in participant on this subject are able to familiarize with the issues. Is there any other matter, members?
Chairperson?
Not worse.
Chairperson, I just thought about it. Since as the IEC said they would get back to us next Friday, I think it would be useful. We received an Excel spreadsheet when this bill was first introduced, looking at the different options and the timeline to go through the National Assembly, the NCOP, how long the IEC would require for certain processes, etc. And so I think, Chair, it might be useful just to get an update of that list so that we can see where we are, and how many days are left, etc., etc. Because, sorry, Chair, so because that list had a Section 75 option, a Section 76 option, what would happen in all the different scenarios? But based on where we are now, I think it would just be useful to have that schedule updated.
Yes. No, correct. Any other contribution?
Chair?
Yes,
the question. I would just like to go back to the comment that the Honourable Pillay made earlier. I think that it was quite a useful input, or I would support his input, that maybe at one stage, I don't know if it will be Tuesday, but that maybe as a committee we take these this document that Adam has given us and that we deliberate on each point. For example, you know, whether it's province or region or signatures or deposit or both, and that we try and find each other in terms of each of these points, so that we've got a committee position on all of these issues that we can then further consult with legal and the IEC on. Maybe it won't be this Tuesday, but I think that would be useful, a useful exercise if we can go through all of them point by point and try and find each other, Chairperson. Thank you.
Yes, noted. Any other contribution?
Chair?
Yes, honorably.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to check with Eddie, but Eddie, the Tuesday's meeting, was it only in terms of the agenda, was it only the Electoral Amendment Bill? Perhaps if we can just get clarity so that, because I'm just trying to seek some direction, Chair, for the committee. Just judging from what we've heard, you know, I don't know from between today and Tuesday whether we're going to be able to do any further deliberations, particularly if you're listening to what other stakeholders have said in terms of their contributions or submissions. And perhaps maybe we need to look at looking at something else on Tuesday, if there is, and deferring this to another meeting so that you give enough time for those submissions, and then we can have discussions. It's just a some kind of guidance, Chair, but I'll be guided by you. Yeah.
What we'll do immediately, we're going to deal with the proposal that arising from Honourable Pillay and Honourable Lizel, and affirmed by Honourable Walls in terms of the spreadsheet on specific issues that we must deliberate on. we will not, because there are more issues for the committee to deal with, to deliberate on. The IEC request to come back on Friday must not impact on the work that they were continuing to deliberate on the matter. At that time, they'll come back to us with the version that will be presenting. The committee will be working on the specific issues that we've been dealing with. We'll isolate the issues that we have referred to the IEC and deal with some of the issues, and that will circulate the notes cover to all the members on the subject issue we're going to delete. What we did with the content advisor it was to pick up the issues that are emerging that the committee members must consider and reflect on for purpose of beginning to get into the deliberation. And this session has assisted us to able to reaffirm some of the issues or the notes that have been taken on. And if you have observed, some of the issues are not covered on the notes pack, but are arising from your input, which are informed by the inputs that have been raised by our members, that have made submissions, stakeholders. Because that is an important area that this legislation must be informed by the contributions that the members have made. Hence, I've re-emphasized that there are options that we ought to policy position that ought to consider the constituency electoral system or the minimalist options that has been presented by the which reflect on the electoral amendment bill, but with the concrete evidence so that we're able to resolve on this options. I think that is the framework which we're going to take, Honorable Pile. In the meantime, when IEC or the legal advisor, parliamentary service are going to interface with the responses, the committee must deliberate on some of the issues that are before us. It will assist us to move quicker in terms of closing the gap and the time that we need to submit the report to the National Assembly. Is that summary assist us to understand why we must proceed in the? It doesn't need the Braed, Honorable Pile and Honorable Ross.
Chair, no, I support that. I support that, and yeah, that takes us forward. Really, thank you.
Honorable Pile, Honorable Ross.
Yeah, same here, Chair. Support it.
Okay. Honorable Co-Chair. Okay. No, I think that is how we're going to proceed. I'll request Mr. Matonzi just to get into the report on a brief note on how we have reconsidered to table this item in our committee meeting in line with the decision we've taken in our session with in our main committee. Mr. Matonzi.
Chairperson, Adam.
Yes, Eddie.
Okay. Oh, if you can remove your. Morning, members. Last this week we met and looked at the revised program, and then I'll start from the 3rd of June, which is today. This is what we have been doing, and then further deliberation was going to take place on the 7th of June, and then that is the deliberation following this one, and then on the same date, Adam will be presenting a committee business plan that is required for the work of the committee. And then on the 14th of June, is closed by close deliberation on the bill. And then I've got other two reports that the CGE needs to brief us. These reports, we have already postponed them twice, so we thought no, it would be better if when we do close by close after that, and then we are able to do, to receive these reports. And then that will be our last meeting during during this term, and then we'll move into recess. Into recess, we have identified 2 days, which is the 21st of June, which is the constituency period. Then we'll be dealing with the A list emanating from the close by close deliberation. And then we'll also have the Minister of Home Affairs briefing us on the reports, on the review of payments within the department. And then on the 28th, which is a week after, then we'll be finalizing the report, finalizing the bill. In other words, we'll be adopting the report that will go to the National Assembly. And then also we have moved this as well, briefing by the minister on the report on the investigation on the loss of financial data and CVs by the within the department, within the government printing works. So this is the program that we have agreed at the MENCO. And then these 2 dates here, I have submitted an application for us to meet. I'm still waiting for the outcome. But I've also submitted the program to the Office of the House Chair for them to approve it. If you check here, Chairperson and members, on the 10th, which is next week Friday, we did not schedule anything. There is in the morning there is a sitting to debate the budget vote one from 10 o'clock. So that's why we did not have a meeting on the 10th of June. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Mr. Matonti. Members, that is our program. Can I get an indication so that it goes through? This is what we have agreed to propose to the committee. And we think it will assist us and enter into recess to deal with this item, particularly on the deliberation on electoral amendment. Can we get approval for the revised program additions, or if there's clarity to Chairperson? Honorable Ross?
Chairperson, I think in the last meeting we were, one of the items that's not on here is the report on the permitting, the extensive analysis that Home Affairs did on all the permits since, I think, 2014. So that should be on there as well. I think we understood that the minister wasn't available at that time, but it's quite an important thing. Okay, there we go. Thank you. Okay, I see it.
Any other matter? Mr. Matons, I'm interested on the IEC to come back. And next week, we are saying there's a sitting at 12 o'clock.
Oh, at 10 o'clock, Friday. At 10 o'clock. Yeah, 10 o'clock.
It's Friday at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Can members is not possible to use that day, that Friday? I know it's Friday, that today the commitments of the day of our colleagues, but if you had to firm up the commitment of our work in this matter, is there members can consider time on Friday? I'm sure they don't want to respond, both IC and legal team.
Chairperson, I can suggest if we can meet at 2 o'clock on Friday. I'm not sure if the debate will be finished by then. I think it will be finished.
Chairperson,
can I get members on the rules?
Chair, I think the item in that morning is the reply of the president. So although it's from 10 to 1, I don't think that reply normally takes that long. So I think, I would have also suggested 2 o'clock to have that meeting.
Okay. Mr. Martins, let's subject this this item to Menco, so that and then we do proper consultation, because you say decision you take at 2 o'clock and members both the or the IEC or legal service they're committed on other issues. We'll communicate the as long as the principle that there's a need for us to consider to move faster on these responses so that decision are taken. Mr. Adams, I think it's clearer that we must go back to frame out the issues and with the spreadsheet that has been advised, both on the options that have been submitted by the our people and the stakeholders and political parties, outside what it seemed to be limiting our approach, that if we take consistent electoral consensus system, it means we must take it next 2024 elections, and so on. But that must not be a subject of our thinking. Our thinking on let's bring a framework that on both issues so that the committee and the IEC are able to assist us in terms of what will be. And I got a report of the IEC already. They're beginning to posture around what may be a challenge in terms of the elections implementing one of the issues, but it's the committee that must not take that decision informed by our submissions, so that in our processing, as Honorable Lay raises, that this is important legislation that we must able to consider and make assessment in terms of the decision that we must take for Parliament to consider. That then will take us to Mr. Matons, if there's no any other issue, or honourable members, if there's no any other matter to raise, it's clearer that is how we're going to interface with on this matter. Is there any other matter outside the recommendation that we need to work on with the content advisor and the researcher, particularly on my side, members? Okay, Mr. Matonzi, I see a hand here, Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to clarify the spreadsheet that I asked for. it was actually the roadmap. It was the roadmap, it wasn't to take these issues and put them in a spreadsheet. I think it was the 16th of August that we received a integrated roadmap, how long it would take to go through the National Assembly, etc. Because I think there's some concerns in circles that we are running out of time. And I think if you look at that roadmap and you look at the current bill as we have it, then, by just going through that and looking at it, we will be able to allay those concerns.
No. Yeah, I think we're correct. Me and you, we're on one page. I'm raising in the matters that we must discuss, deliberate as a committee, that we must have a proper line so that we're able to deal with the subject matter and deal with it, finish and deal with another one in the manner that the Honorable Pile, Honorable Lizelle has raised. What informs these notes that were presented today that give us an accurate framework in the manner that we must deliberate on this? That assists the committee to deliberate and the referral to the Parliamentary Legal Service and IEC that needs to come out to the committee. I think that will assist the committee to deal with. Mr. Matonzi, is there another matter that you want to...
Chairperson, there's no other matter, Chair.
Okay. Thanks, members. That takes us to conclude this first deliberation on the issues that we've raised. I want to thank members of the committee to have been able to contribute on the issues and able to get a referral to the IEC and the parliamentary legal team and the state law advisors. We want to appreciate the presence of your contributions and members of the committee who have now begun to interface with this subject. Thanks very much. This meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.